Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki Balancing Form and Essence. Today we're continuing interviews with Reiki masters who have taught in different countries and lived in different countries sometimes for a while. One of the things that is behind all this for me and was encouraged by a lot of the listeners is that, you know, there's a part of this practice that seems to be very similar in all these different cultures, which is really important. And in last week, we heard from Alima Fontaine about this feeling of coming home, of finding a spiritual anchor for herself, and also that's true for her students. And I feel like this is true the world around. And there are the differences of culture, which also point out sometimes places where we might need as masters to look at in ourselves, and also for students to understand how Reiki goes into different cultures and also creates a healing process for that culture in and of itself as an individual. So this has been fascinating for me over all these years and kind of a sociological study, I guess. And today I have with me Candy Brandt. She's a longtime Reiki student, you'll hear her story. And also, she was able to go to Russia and spend quite a lot of time in Russia. And we'll talk about her experiences there. She's a little different than Volker Brink, who I had on earlier in the show and talking about his experiences in Russia, because Foka travels, though he's there for quite a few weeks, he didn't really actually live there. And I don't know how much of the language he picked up, but Candy actually, for some interesting reason, studied Russian when she was in school, so she understood quite a lot of the language. And I always think that learning a language always gives you some really interesting insights into the cultural patterns that you're speaking in. So we'll see if this is true for Candy. Welcome, Candy, to the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, and well, it's so exciting to actually talk about this in another way, because of course Candy and I have had lots of conversations about Reiki practice in Russia and so on, but not in this particular venue. So I always think that these conversations are much more interesting somehow. In looking at the wider scope of our experience as masters. So Candy, can you just tell us a little bit about your Reiki background and also how you came to take the Russian language when you were in school?
Well, I'd always had a fascination with Russia, which was called the Soviet Union when I was a girl growing up. And I remember even in third grade having to choose a country to do a report on, and I did a report on the Soviet Union, and
wow.
I drew this gigantic map on this huge piece of tag board, and as part of our presentations, we had to stand on the stage in our elementary school, and my report was about the Soviet Union. And it just, that was the pattern through the rest of my schooling, it seemed. Every time there was a choice about a place to do a report on it, it ended up being about Russia or the Soviet Union, or sometimes the Soviet Union and China and that kind of thing. And even in college, I did a special report on Sino-Soviet relations. I mean, the fascination continued.
Wow, that's amazing. Tell me.
Yeah. So then later, when I had some time to take my first real vacation, meaning, you know, be gone from my job for weeks kind of thing, I went to, for 5 weeks, to the Soviet Union and joined up with a group of people, an English-speaking tour, and traveled all over the Soviet Union and visited a lot of places. And it was just the most amazing time for me. I just loved it. And I came home and, you know, kind of got on with my life and never really thought too much about it, and then took my first Reiki class in 1982, and then actually was initiated to start teaching in 1987, but it was in the United States. I really must say I didn't have a goal of teaching Reiki in Russia. Because I really hadn't, other than that vacation, had never been outside the United States.
Mm-hmm.
But then I had an opportunity to travel to Germany. There was a master's meeting there that I had a chance to be with and friends to stay with. And at the time I was also doing, you know, transformation game workshops, which I continue to do. So I went to Germany and ended up pretty much living there for 2 years, not teaching Reiki, but doing transformation game workshops and then coming home and teaching Reiki and going back. I mean, Reiki was for home. It wasn't for abroad kind of thing.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, I don't know why. I think probably because there were already a lot of Reiki masters in Germany and in Europe. And although I had taken some training in German and could get along on my day-to-day things and enjoyed being there, it wasn't somehow... I don't know, I kind of felt like it wasn't my place to teach Reiki. And then I heard about Foka, an old friend of mine who was going to be teaching in St. Petersburg, Russia, which was, I think, just newly called St. Petersburg. It had been Leningrad until then. This was just after their latest revolution. Revelation. And,
could be a revelation.
Could be. So I remember calling Foka on the phone. I just had this feeling that I should be there teaching Reiki in Russia. That was the first time I consciously thought about it. So I just called him up and I told him about the dream I'd had. And he says, well, you have to come, you know, being Foka. He's always been so generous. And so he invited me to come to help him teach some classes he'd lined up in St. Petersburg because he had so many students. I think you were there at the time, too, speaking on during part of the time that I was there that first time. And
yes.
I just, you know, had an amazing time with the classes, but I was, you know, just assisting. I weren't my classes. But then this one of these wonderful coincidental things happened, which are not coincidences in my book anyway. A young man, Russian man, came to me and asked to speak with me at one of the breaks at a program that you were presenting. And he spoke only German and Russian. Now, how, what are the odds that the only foreign languages I had at that point were German and Russian? Because I'd had Russian in school and had been, you know, living in Germany. So he said, well, how would you like to come to Russia and teach Reiki classes? He says, I have 800 students waiting. Well, my jaw just dropped open. And everything, you know, in the best of circumstances like that just flowed after that. Some other young women came to me and offered me a place to stay. And I mean, it just went from that. So within 3 months, I was in Russia, starting to teach Reiki classes. And it was that feeling of, this is what I was meant to do. You know, this is the place I need to be with this. And not worried about being in a foreign country or anything. It was really quite interesting to feel so at home in a culture which even at that time was so different from my own. So it was amazing. So I don't think they are coincidences. And it's just, for me, it felt like being willing to listen to what your heart wants to do next and let the Reiki sort of energy tell you where the next step goes and then where the next step goes. And then see what happens. And this has always been it for me. So,
So can you put a year on this? I'm
this
not
is about
good.
1995, I think. Oh, no, I could be wrong on this too. But this was just, I mean, within months after the revolution. I can't change the word now. Remember? And when the communist system fell and they were in big change to a new system. So that was the first time I'd been back since I had been there almost 20 years previously as a tourist.
Right. So as the Soviet Union, actually, it was probably very forbidden to have anything like Reiki being taught publicly.
Absolutely not, because I remember when I was there as part of this tour group, I had a good talking to by one of my Russian guide. In one city I went to because I had stepped away from the prepared path and had taken an invitation from some people I had met to go visit some places in the mountains, you know, during the day and come back. Well, she was fit to be tied, so It was not acceptable to do that. And there were no churches, or the churches that we saw on the tours were always empty tourist places and not being used supposedly for worship. And we were cautioned not to speak about religious or spiritual things. It was very interesting at that time. So you can imagine my, happy surprise when I came for Reiki classes, because I so much love to teach them, and here is a group of people just hungry to personally connect with their own spiritual path, their own essence inside, and the energy universe. And here I am with something that at least gives them a start on that path. Mm-hmm. And it was mm-hmm. just an incredible combination of events.
Right. So I know that Foca went in right at the moment when Gorbachev opened Russia for, the next step. And what happened was, of course, is that the USSR became Russia, and then 14, I think, other countries got their identity back. And so in this time, there was this, rush, I think, and a hunger for the people, especially this kind of underground that the Russians speak about, that was always alive and always seeking and, reading in secret yoga books and stuff like that. And now they could do it not really openly, but somewhat openly.
Yeah,
it was kind of a quasi-openness.
And the reason that the people that I was meeting were so excited about Reiki is that it was a way to support their connection with a spiritual self that they'd always felt sure about, this almost mystic center that's been part of the Russian history as long as time is recorded. And that has been the main experience for me with Reiki, was this mystical connection, the spiritual connection. So we were a natural match.
So tell me a little bit about your impression of the Russian spirit. This last interview that I had with Alima, we got really into speaking about spirit in Mexico and in the Mexican people, and how it's very vibrant and alive and also has form. And it's been really interesting to, in this moment, just think about my own impressions of the native, what I would call native or innate Russian spirituality, which also is very mystical.
Yes.
So, yes. So I'm just wondering if you have a historical background and stuff that you can share with us about that.
I have. I would have to say that it's my personal experience, and I have not studied it as an academic subject per se. But I know that when I initially came and was initially the classes, particularly the ones I was teaching at the beginning, people who came to my classes sometimes traveled days and weeks with no money to come to a class that they'd only heard about, for which they had no knowledge of content.
Mm-hmm.
They were almost 90% of the people who came to the classes operated entirely on instinct, on intuition, on knowing this was the next thing for them to do. And using, that as the reason to give up anything, their homes, their possessions, whatever they had, to get on a train, a bus, to walk, to whatever way it took, to travel sometimes thousands of miles to come to where we were at that point teaching classes in Moscow. There weren't that many occurring out in the farther reaches of the Soviet Union and or Russia at that time. That just stunned me, that people would come literally traveling for weeks and closed up and sometimes sold their home to come to take this Reiki class, because they knew it was their connection with spirit and it was the next place. This was what fed them more than material goods or personal goods.
Isn't that amazing?
And it was the predominant reason that people came to the class. Of course, Moscow is a big place and many people live locally, and I mean, they could also have had that reason, but it was so obvious that about 50% of my classes would be from people coming from vast distances.
Mm-hmm.
For just this connection with spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And this, I got the feeling that, well, what they would say, of course, is the spirit's alive and well, during the entire Soviet times.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder sometimes, because it was not allowed an outward expression, where it was made into forms that were publicly, you know, celebrated, if it didn't have a deeper root, in an unworded way that, just grew stronger and stronger because of that. You know what I'm
mm-hmm.
saying?
Mm-hmm.
The energy didn't seem to dissipate because they were forming this church and that church and trying to explain to anyone what they were doing. It was not, you couldn't speak about it except with very close friends. So where does this energy go? It goes inside. It goes deeper, and it comes out in poetry, and it comes out in song, and it comes out in relationships between people. And it also comes out with, came up for them with a very strong connection to, the myths, the creation myths and the primitive energies with the shamans, for their Far East, that they had the stories for. And this is where, it bloomed and grew. And it was just assumed that people were connected with this. And then there would be a very small percentage, maybe 10% of the people I would meet in Moscow who were part of the new atheists, is what they would call themselves, who had believed the Soviet line that there was no God, there was no bigger power, there was no, you know, so forth. So I didn't see too many of them in class, Reiki classes. But some of them would come, even though they had started out being absolutely atheistic because they believed what they had been told. And then when they would put their hands on themselves, they would find this connection with the Reiki energy, and they would not give it mystical or spiritual names. They would call it the energy. But it was, I think, probably very confusing from what I could see for those that had been told that there was no God and had believed it, thought they believed it,
mm-hmm.
to feel this
mm-hmm.
obvious sharing of energy and not knowing what to do with it. So that was also, but it was, that was a smaller group. And then the longer I was in the country, the more people were actually being able to describe what they were experiencing, and Reiki was being taught in, you know, the farther reaches of Russia, and people didn't need to travel so far and so forth and so on. But that connection still remains as far as I could see.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. It, from outside, way outside, it just, I don't know. I suppose this is the total cliche that all Russians probably just like. But when I when I watched Dr. Zhivago, for instance, I just had this feeling of this mystical North country that the spirits were really alive, and it wasn't, it was really different than what I would call jungle spirits in myself. It was more etheric somehow, and much more, instead of being so body oriented, it seemed like it was more mentally oriented. But I don't know if that's really true. It just seems that there's a mysticism that is about understanding that the mind is much more than we know, and that their willingness to just be open-minded in a very different way than what I would think, not about opinions and belief systems, but just about the limitation of our mind and how, what we put on it, gives them a certain, that when they take in Reiki, it seems to go into a different place in themselves. I mean, am I being clear?
Not yet. I'm kind of getting
not
a feeling.
Yet.
Not quite yet. Tell me a little bit more.
Okay. Let's see. So in following your feeling about this mysticism that goes inside rather than being outwardly expressed because it was suppressed.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if not, if that coupled with their, with this location, so to speak, of having this connection with what I would call the northern mystic environment of nature, that
mm-hmm.
that combination creates a kind of, well, creates a more mental mysticism rather than something that comes from what I perceive the jungles of Africa, for instance, which is another kind of mysticism, but more body-oriented.
Well, I know that one of the feelings is very much alive is the belief in the shamanistic, you know, the early shamans
mm-hmm.
there, and the firmly held belief that the world began in Altai, which is, you know, in the mountains in the east, and that there are shamanistic tribes that are beginning to write or are beginning to be written about coming out of that
mm-hmm.
that have a very heavy, you know, shamanistic tradition. I'm trying my mind to compare it with someplace like the jungles, and I can't quite make the connection. I do know that for me, the romance of the small villages in the woods kind of thing is pretty much like the romance that we would have about the early United States when the early settlers came, and I mean, it was not really true, you know.
Uh-huh.
It was hard work. It was scrabble living. It was difficult to make a living. It was deprivation. And the counterbalance for that is, in many cases, at that time at least, a beautiful setting, you know, unspoiled land, unsettled territory.
Mm-hmm.
But then I think we're talking way, way back, because, you know, once the Soviet Union came into being, a lot of these, all of the small communities were put into, you know, cooperatives that
mm-hmm.
had to produce, you know, in a certain way, and life was totally controlled.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, I don't quite feel that kind of a mysticism in that way. The other part for me, though, that I can't quite draw together in there is always been a very large respect for academia, for studying, for academics, for people who, for philosophers and poets
mm-hmm.
and the people who study. Even when I was coming, it was not, there was no real television even when I first came.
Mm-hmm.
So what would happen when people would come is they would sit around and eat and talk and drink tea and so forth and so on, but people would, they would write a poem about me and tell it and recite it for me, or they would recite a poem that they'd written about their life, or they'd sing a song that they had that described what was going on in their life.
Beautiful.
Or, yes, and this is how evenings were spent. Now, later years, when it was closer to 2000, when I was leaving, this was not happening so much, and there was a lot more television, which I thought was a great loss. But all of the songs and all of the poetry and all of the written essays and things like that that I heard either recited or were presented to me or that I discovered, all were mystical. They were all included the sense of Russia as fated to be in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And every one of them, even the love songs were this way.
Mm-hmm.
There was also quite a sadness and a pessimism that seemed to be part of that too, but it wasn't
mm-hmm.
created by anything new. It just was there from
mm-hmm.
the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
That connection is there, and that was how life was looked at. Now, some people just say that that's because if you're that poor, you know, you have to think of a good reason, good explanation for what's going on, and fate seems like a good idea, et cetera, et cetera. But we know that's not true, and I mean, those of us that have traveled to other cultures and so forth, you can have poor communities even, you know, in any country, and here in the United States as well, and the result of that as a general thing is not great poetry, great philosophy, great art, great music. You know what I'm saying? There are a few people that will express their condition in that way, but my experience in Russia was that everyone had this creative connection to a mystical, spiritual center somehow that came out as a general woman, man in the street kind of thing.
Wow.
Does that make any sense
at
all?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So that was different for me because it wasn't just a few sort of geniuses being thrown up kind of thing. It was just the natural, this is how our neighbors talk to each other thing.
Wow, that's beautiful.
Yeah, anyone I would talk to. I mean, I remember once I was in an airport looking like a tourist, and the woman who swept the hall, was sweeping the halls in there, came up to me, and she says, who are you? Where are you coming from? She says, do you believe in God? I mean, they're right away. Do you believe in God? This is a street sweeper. You know, how do you believe in God, et cetera. She wanted a discussion about God in my life because I was a foreigner she hadn't met, and that's how she wanted to connect with me.
Wow.
And that was in St. Petersburg, and that was probably 1996, just about the second time I went through there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that was typical.
Well, that's amazing. So, eventually, you came back to the United States from Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I don't know how that was for you. Did you go through a kind of withdrawal from this particular culture?
Oh, absolutely. I'm still going through it. It's quite amazing. I mean, because of the way the visa system worked from 1995 until I officially came home in 2000, I was able to live abroad for 6 months of the year, and then I had to be back for 6 months. So I would usually go, I had an apartment in Moscow, and I would live there for 3 months and travel from there in Russia and then come back and then go again and come back. But when I was at home, I was on vacation, visiting family, doing some Reiki classes sort of thing, but not, it was clearly my vacation to be back in the United States, and my home was in Moscow.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a funny feeling. So then when I understood, I just had the intuition right about the year 2000 that it was time for me to come home. I mean, you know how that is. You just know that it's time now.
Uh-huh.
And so I came home, and I remember being absolutely lost to be here. I mean, in my home. Luckily, my sister took me in. And first of all, I came from a situation where when I was in Russia or traveling in Russia and Uzbekistan and so forth, that I was teaching Reiki all the time, or doing Reiki classes,
right,
or doing Reiki treatments, or,
right,
you know, that
immersed.
Was the entire week.
Yeah.
And I came back to a city where I knew no one else who did practice Reiki, and could not, other than maybe, I could maybe get two or three, four people to come to a Reiki class, but maybe once a month or twice a month kind of thing, and their connection with Reiki was not the same mystical kind of spiritual connection that I had. The people in this culture, in my United States culture, at least where I was more for personal healing, for development of their life, you know, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But never really for the spiritual or mystical aspects of it, which is where I lived.
Right, right.
And so I would have a difficult time. So I just, you know, tried to treat myself and treat as many people as I could just to keep connected, you know,
mm-hmm.
to that energy.
Mm-hmm.
And the process since that time coming back in 2000 has been one of learning to sort of move my energy inside and keep my connection to the Reiki energy very strong and express it in my personal life because I do not teach classes like I did there because it's different. And I don't know if it's because my expression attracts different people and I'm out of sync here or what, but, you know, I have to do Reiki. I mean, of course I treat myself, but any opportunity to treat others, to do Reiki exchanges, and then wonderfully, you know, to open my home to any Reiki people that I know that are coming through and can meditate with me, and any time we can get together. And I still, after 10 years home, have a feeling that my real life is with the Reiki community and only secondarily where I live. And it makes it very, very difficult because there are no institutions, either of religion or philosophy or socially, that contain the dedication to that connection with Reiki and, you know, that we feel. And I can find bits of it in all the different forms, but no place other than a community of Reiki people can I find all of it. And I, so it's an odd feeling knowing I should be living here and yet not being able to have that depth of connection on a 24-hour basis that I was so delighted to have.
And do you sense in the future any return to Russia?
I did go back 2 years ago and had a wonderful time. When I had been teaching there, I'd had an opportunity to train and initiate six masters and to meet with them. At least found five of them, and we still remain in connection and see how their lives are going and how, you know, Reiki is working in their lives. And then I have some dear friends there that are as close as family from the years that I've been there. And I'm hoping to go back in another couple of years. I'll be finally able to retire from the day job I have right now at the end of next year. And then I will be able to, you know, be where my heart is more. And I'm really looking forward to it. At the same time, I must say, I don't believe that there are mistakes about these things. I don't believe I'm in the wrong place.
Right. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. I mean, it's uncomfortable. It's not fulfilling in recognized ways. But I recognize that I'm learning a lot of lessons where I am, and that I am an American, and there are gifts that I give to my own country by being here. And so I continue to seek for the things that will express, you know, who I am in a way that fits within my own, you know, home culture, which I'm, you know, of course, very connected to. But I'll be happy to find ways to spend more time with my Reiki communities, my Reiki families.
And you've never connected to the Russian communities here in the United States. I know that there are some.
I haven't really, and I have often, I've taken the next step when an opportunity arose to offer the possibility, and it hasn't worked out. So I trust that, you know, it wasn't for me to do in a way. I even have people living next door to me now who are from the Ukraine. And while they're tickled that I speak the language, they're trying to learn English, so they don't want to speak it. But on holidays, I get some wonderful baked goods that just bring tears to my eyes.
Right. Oh, gosh. Wonderful.
So that doesn't seem to have been my path to connect with the communities here. And whenever the opportunity arose, I, you know, in fact, I even for a while was listing my classes in English and in Russian. And it just didn't happen. So, I mean, I trust that that was what was, you know.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, you do what you can do, and then you just wait for the energy to play out and see where it leads you, you know, what I have to do.
Right. Well, I don't know. You know, it's it is always amazing, and I think that the country, the culture of Russia has really definitely given me a huge gift, and I can't really explain it in words. Obviously, I have some romantic ideas, and you have less romance, more of the down-to-earth street cred than I do, which is great. And I also feel that I have a hard time imagining to not go back to Russia, because it's a source of some very interesting movement within myself. And
Well, at first I wouldn't go back because I was feeling so fragmented, and I had to find a way to be here. And it was so hard to be in the United States because I wasn't there. And so, I mean, it was so painful. And then, I mean, what I realize now is there's actually literally a part of me that still lives there. And always will. And I totally understand what you're saying. I think that's true for you, too. I think there may be just a part that's so connected. And we just acknowledge that, whether I'm living there or not. So I will go as often as I can.
Well, it's fascinating to find yourself, you know, in a country that, for me, when I first went there, and that was the time that you were there teaching with Fuka, and he called me, and there was this big hullabaloo, and I ended up going, and realized that I had come to the country where this was our arch enemy, you know, as an archetypal thing for all of my childhood, and that I had to kind of get over that. Once I got over that, then with a lot of help from my Russian friends, I realized that there was something also that they were teaching me, and I think that that has been true for all the countries that I've gone to.
Absolutely.
And there's something about the quality of how they integrate Reiki, and it's on some level it's normal and kind of, well, of course, and at the same time there's this holding it not like a religion, but as a very precious gift.
Yes. Yes.
And that they would give anything for. And I'm just, it always, that kind of paradox, it seems like a paradox to me, has a lot of juice in this tension, you know, between the two.
Well, then it's been hard for me coming from that and feeling that same way myself to come to a culture where it's, Reiki is not valued in that way. I think people come to value it. But we're just not bred in this culture to think that way about a lot of these things. And it's almost painful to have Reiki treated in such a casual way after, you know, finding where I really, you know, understood how it should be held. It's hard. And so I think that's probably one of the biggest challenges here. So.
Right. Well, I agree with you for sure. And it's an interesting place because, you know, you would think that it would, you know, and kind of in my 1980 mind, before I went to Russia, I would have assumed that it would have been the other way around.
Ah, interesting.
Yeah, that the United States, because of its spiritual context and connection and freedom, so to speak, that that this country would have embraced Reiki in a very different way than it has, and that the Russians would find it very foreign and so on, and yet it actually seemed to have had the opposite.
Yes, exactly.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, this is very true. It was such a gift, I mean, to be living there. And of course, one of the gifts for someone like living in a foreign country is, at least initially when you don't understand a lot of the language, is that for me, I was forced to draw my connection with people in other ways other than their words. And for someone like myself who had, you know, who wrote, spoke, you know, words were such a large part of my life, it was an amazing experience to have no words, really. To speak to people people, but still this yearning to connect and to find the connection with Reiki, of course, and then also to understand through the heart what people were saying or what mm-hmm. they wanted to say mm-hmm. and not have any words to explain it.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
that was a gift. I think that anybody who goes to a foreign country and doesn't have the language at first will find that so, but I mean, I've learned a number of, you know, a few languages at this point, and I think what's interesting for me about the Russian language, as I learned about it when I was visiting there, is that most often when I would speak to people, that they really didn't care what order I put the words in, whether they had the correct grammatical endings or not.
Right.
It was, I mean, if I had four words out of a sentence that I wanted to say, all I had to do was put them out there and be, but at the same time have my heart connection with them, and they totally understood what I was saying. And in other countries that I was, well, particularly in Germany, but I mean, this is true in some other countries, but in Germany, if you didn't have, I mean, the words had to be in a certain order. They had to have, which was not, you know, the English order anyway, which was kind of a challenge, and had to have endings depending on, you know, whether they were masculine or feminine or, you know, noun.
Right,
and so forth.
Right.
And people didn't, well, they seemed to not really understand if I couldn't get that together.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so it was really an amazing heart opening for me to be someplace where it didn't matter. And in fact, in the community where I was living, we spoke in the place where I was living in an apartment. We spoke English, German, and Russian as a group. Everybody had something, and the first sentences were usually, we called the language Germlish, and we just put anything, any word from any language together we wanted and got it together, and we had wonderful conversations.
That's great.
Yeah. Went on into the night.
Oh, great. Well, I'd like to kind of get back to thinking about Reiki classes. And
yeah.
Did you teach really large ones while you were there? And I'm just wondering if you have an experience of a class that you could tell us about.
Well, when I first went there, I was not one of the first teachers. And the first teachers who had gone taught really huge classes, like 50, 60 people in
uh-huh.
a class. And they also charged the Russian ruble at that point was not registered on the international bank, you know,
right.
So it was not exchangeable. So, and plus the people in the country were not used to using money at all, frankly.
Right.
I mean, so it really didn't, it had, money itself was kind of a mystical experience for them.
Right.
Because it really wasn't connected to work or to goods or to services.
Or to value
at
all. No.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Not any real understanding of it. So when I started, I taught, the first time I went, we had 50 in a first degree group. I didn't even teach second degree the first time I went, of course, but, and the going rate, I don't know if it was 10 rubles, 20 rubles, something like that, which I had, you know, absolutely no idea of. I was told that it represented what a person could live on for a week.
Uh-huh.
But for some people, quite frankly, 20 was more than they made in a month. So, I mean, it was a lot of money to them. But 50 people, and I thought, oh, my goodness sakes. I mean, here was me and my translator and the guy who was organizing for me, and I, you know, the four sessions for the first degree class, and I would have some time to talk with them, and then it seemed like I spent most of the rest of the time doing initiations, and, you know, while they were then having them treat each other and, you know, checking the energy and checking their positions and so forth, moving from person to person. I never seemed to remember any names, you know, oh, this can't go on. I really didn't like it. But the pressure from the local people was that so many people wanted the class and that I had so little time.
Uh-huh, right.
And I mean, people would come from out of town and they would sleep on the doorstep of the school outside the door. And if the class was full, I had a couple of times people who slept outside the door, even though they couldn't come in. I mean, it was frightening. So, second time I came, I was ruthless for me, and I took the first degree class down to 20 people. And my organizer was horrified, just horrified, because his list of people who wanted the class was growing.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, although I tried to make it first come, first served, I think it's entirely possible that he was making deals for places in the class.
Right.
You know? And I knew this was happening, and I didn't want to encourage it happening, but I wouldn't take the other solution, which was to make the classes bigger. And so if I would come for a month and I was doing a first degree class each week, that's only four classes.
Mm-hmm.
And that was as many people as I would be able to train while I was there in first degree. And for me, energetically, I wanted 4 days spent on a first degree class out of a 7-day week was as much as I wanted to do, because I would spend the other time, you know, working with people and doing other things with Reiki and treating
mm-hmm.
ourselves
mm-hmm.
and so forth,
mm-hmm.
you know. So then I started staying longer. I started staying 3 months, but still didn't want to do more than that. If I traveled to St. Petersburg, I would do a first degree class, and then a couple years later started adding a second degree class all in a long weekend. That was intense for me because, you know, the energy of that was so big.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But they were always full. There were always more people that we needed. The classes in Russia were different in that it was expected that there would be a tea break every day of the class. This was expected. Oh, and because a lot of people also smoked. Right. So there had to be a break. And for a four-hour class, they could not stay for 4 hours in a chunk without a little break. And so I finally got them I was brave enough by my third visit to put the tea break at the end of the class, you know, so that we wouldn't go away and come back. And then finally, after another year, we would have only like about a 20-minute break, but no formal tea set up in the middle. But then at the end, we would have a celebration.
Mm-hmm.
And after the last initiation on the last day of the class, and people would, I mean, we would have everything, you know. And this seemed to be the pattern then after that for all of my classes, is that there would be a little break about halfway through the lot, 4 to 6 hours for each day of the first degree class, and then a party at the end.
Uh-huh.
That was okay. Somehow they could live with that. I've noticed this is true in other cultures that I've done workshops in, too. The amount of time that people are willing, able to sit together doing certain kinds of things before culturally they
uh-huh.
think you're crazy, you know. In the United States, we sit for long times.
I mean, yes.
We're long times. And, of course, since less people smoke anymore, that reason's gone.
Yes.
But it was really interesting to me because even though I would try to do it, I realized that they were just not able to stay connected past a certain point. But then after I trusted myself more, and about the second year or so, I realized that, you know, they could do it.
Uh-huh.
So,
uh-huh.
And then we had the party.
That's great. But, you know, the interesting thing that I find about some cultures, and the Russian culture for sure is one of them, is that their socialization
mm-hmm.
is not to escape what's happening. It's to deepen it.
Yeah.
And I find that when one of the things that was, you know, was a challenge to me here in the United States, and I have cut out all the breaks in the Reiki class because of this,
mm-hmm.
is because the tea breaks ended up to be social, truly social,
mm-hmm.
and what happened is that they assumed that the Reiki was social too, so it didn't send the right message
mm-hmm.
somehow for me to always have a tea break. So I've cut those out,
mm-hmm.
and as much as I can, and I realized that in countries like Russia or other countries where they absolutely have to stop and have a cup of tea, it's not an escape. It's more of a way for them to integrate and to deepen.
I think that's really true for me, too. And when I stopped having an official kind of tea break, but just had sort of a break, do what you
mm-hmm.
want kind of
right.
thing for about 20-30 minutes. I mean, they did in fact go out into the next room and they would have a little snack and maybe they'd bring something, but I never had the experience that I had to really pull them back when they came back. I mean, they remained connected to what we were doing.
Right.
And I never had a difficulty with that at that point. So, yeah, I agree with you. I hadn't put it in those words, but I think that's true for me, too.
Yeah. Well, it's really neat to talk to you about this experience because it just articulates. I mean, you've articulated some of the things that I've felt but wasn't able to talk to anybody about.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been great. And we're a little bit, we have a few more minutes, and I'm just wondering if you have a story or something that comes to mind that you would like to tell about your experiences in Russia.
I guess probably my most exciting end of a Reiki class was when the host of the house in which we were doing, this was in Uzbekistan actually, the hostess had left and left me to her house for the class, and on the last night she her brother decided that he wanted the house back, and so he came with a gun. And we were in one room, and he ordered us to leave the house. And what was interesting for me, as I guess it probably hadn't been that unrealistic for them, some of them were, hadn't been so odd, they got us a cab, meaning a person with a car who was willing to take us to one of their homes, and we continued. We just got in the car, went across town to someone's home, went in the home, and continued.
Without much ado.
And then somebody said, well, that happens sometimes. And then, I mean, it's things like that that really, you know, open your eyes. I mean, another Reiki class, when I would teach in St. Petersburg, the place where I would hold my class was not one of the better neighborhoods, and it was not unusual to hear gunshots on the streets. And one morning, you know, coming to the class, there's a body on the sidewalk.
Oh, my God.
With a coat over it. And I'm kind of looking at it. Well, the woman who, my organizer, who's walking with me, don't pay any attention. I guess it was not considered culture to pay attention to the dead body on the street.
Mm-hmm.
It was quite interesting. And then we walked to the school where we were doing the class and began the class. And I was more aware after that of the sounds that I was hearing while I was doing classes there, because I had not recognized them as gunshots before, and then I realized that that's what they were. So this is their life, and they're coming to Reiki classes, and it's like they put their mind someplace else. And for the time of the class, which is 4 to 6 hours, because we had to have, you know, little breaks and start late and stay longer kind of thing.
And also interpretation. Did you use interpreters?
Oh, interpretation, yeah.
Yeah.
Right at the beginning, yeah. Near the last years that I was there, I always had an interpreter with me, but it wasn't really necessary.
Well, that's neat. Yeah, great.
But even when we had it, yeah, so that takes a little longer sometimes. But it was just an eye-opener for me. I was so blessed to have those experiences, to be there, because what's wonderful about traveling for Reiki is that you remain connected to the center of this wonderful energy in places and situations that would probably flip you out on any other kind of a tourist trip. And I saw places I would never have seen. I met people I never would have met.
Right.
And always felt connected and secure and centered and okay, you know, about being in the right place. And that was such an amazing gift.
Well, beautifully said.
Yeah.
Thanks. Thank you very much for sharing all of this with us. It's been wonderful, Tandy.
Oh, thank you so much, Phyllis.
Yeah, great. Well, listeners, this is another show and another experience. I hope to be with you again next week when I'm back again with another master. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, balancing form and essence.